Hey, it's Ben Greenfield. I recently had a bunch of ripped meathead freaks over to my recording studio in my basement, and I'm about to reveal to you via audio the chaos that ensued. But should you actually want to listen to something slightly longer via audio, or perhaps even more engaging than what you're about to hear, not that what you're about to hear is bad. I'm making it sound bad. It's not. You should check out Audible. I don't know if you knew this, but I've got 19 hours and 48 minutes of my complete Beyond Training book on Audible. I think that would allow you to drive at least halfway across the United States of America listening to me and my annoying voice in your car talking about everything, performance plateaus and brain fog and gas and bloating and libido and anti-aging and biohacking. It's about 500 pages jam-packed with content that I read to you. Well, you can get that over at Audible, because Audible, for everybody listening into this show, has a 30-day trial that lets you get that book or any other book that you want, your first audiobook, for free. You go to audible.com/fitness to get a free 30-day trial and audiobook, and they have a huge selection. I mean, literally, like hundreds of thousands of books, literally. See what I did there? Because it's lit. Anyways, you just download the books or your shows to your mobile device and you listen while the car flies by or wherever else you happen to be on a gridlocked freeway. Audible audiobooks, you can get lost in them. So check it out, audible.com/fitness. This podcast is also brought to you by Harry's, and Harry's has this cool new free kit that they'll send to your house. What is Harry's? Harry's creates these amazing razors. Like, their 5-blade razor has a soft flex hinge for a comfortable glide. Do you like how my voice gets soft when I start describing their features? A trimmer blade for hard to reach places, a lubricating strip, and a textured handle for more control when your razor handle is wet. If you're one of those people that shaves in the shower, like my wife, who steals my Harry's razor and shaves her legs in the shower. Not that I care, baby. I still love you. I'm just saying. Anyways, though, so here's the deal with Harry's. They have made it so you can get this stuff for free. It's a free trial set is what they call it. You get the razor, you get what's called their 5-blade cartridge, and their shaving gel, which is actually this really good foaming shave gel that is good for your skin. It's got aloe in it and cucumber. So rather than like chopping up cucumber and smearing it on your face like you were just about to do, you can instead use the Harry's foaming shave gel and save yourself a cucumber. So you get this free shaving trial when you sign up for any shaving plan on their website. You do pay shipping, but that's it. Not a Zippo zilch aside from shipping. So you enter code Ben at harrys.com, harrys.com, and enter code Ben at checkout to get your free trial set and your post-shave balm, which you're going to throw in too. That's a new one. They're actually going to include, I guess, two things. Not only your cream that you could shave with, or your gel rather, along with the razor and the 5-blade cartridge, but then your post-shave balm. Everything you need for a sexy, smooth face. Finally, this podcast is brought to you by, let me tell you this. My wife, I've mentioned her twice already. It's crazy. She's getting a lot of cameos on this podcast episode. She's going to have to cut me a check. She got sick. I was gone and she got sick, and I got home and she had the stomach flu, and I'm about to go hunting up in Canada for a week, and I do not want to go hunting while I'm throwing up my insides. So not only did I not go into my bedroom, I slipped into the guest room and I slept there. I know it's bad. I should have gone in there and snuggled up to my wife, but I didn't because I knew she was pukey. But I also slammed two of these chaga elixirs this morning. So these chaga elixirs, I don't know if you know about chaga, but it's able to fight infections and bacteria and colds and viruses and things that might make you poo or throw up a little funny. And you just take these packets and you put them in coffee or tea or anything else that you want. And it's a dual extract, meaning that they get the water soluble components and then also the fat soluble components squeezed into this tiny little green packet. And they throw like some Eleuthero and rose hips in there for vitamin C, little filled mint for some flavor. And it's really good stuff. So CHAGA, it's this big black mushroom that grows on birch trees. You get 15% off of that or any of the other mushrooms from Four Sigmatic Foods when you go to foursigmatic.com/greenfield. That's FOUR sigmatic.com/greenfield. And and you use 15% code Greenfield. That'll get you everything you need to not be a sad-faced, pukey person. So check it all out. The Audible book, the razors, the chaga mushroom extract, and also check this out, an amazing interview with the dudes from Mind Pump. In this episode of the Ben Greenfield Fitness Show.
One group of people, I had them do squats very heavily, and then the following days I had them walk and stretch and do light bodyweight lunges. And the other group of people, they hammered their legs and then they just bed rest for the rest of the week. Just lay in bed and don't move. The people in bed rest would lose muscle. They'd lose muscle and strength within a 5-day, 7-day period, even shorter.
It just changed my relationship with carbohydrates and with fats. So for so many years as trainers, I mean, we've demonized fat. And I mean, I remember telling clients, like, oh, don't even try and get fat in your diet. You know, when I first started 15 years ago.
He's an expert in human performance and nutrition. Voted America's top personal trainer and one of the globe's most influential people in health and fitness. His show provides you with everything you need to optimize physical and mental performance. He is Ben Greenfield.
Power, speed, mobility, balance. Whatever it is for you, that's the natural movement. Get out there. When you look at all the studies done, studies that have shown the greatest efficacy.
All the information you need in one place, right here, right now, on the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast.
Hey, what's up? It's Ben Greenfield, and last night in the wee hours of the evening, four guys from San Jose descended upon my home for a homemade meal full of chicken and organic wine and tomatillos and buckwheat pancakes and a general good time all around. And then they came back this morning and we threw down a relatively epic podcast and a podcast that you're about to listen to. These are the guys from what is called the Mind Pump Media Podcast and the Mind Pump website, which we'll talk a little bit more about during the episode. It's not often that I have four people on the podcast simultaneously, so I may leave it up slightly to you to be able to differentiate between all the voices that you're going to hear. But either way, we're going to talk about what they specialize in, which is pulling back the curtain on mythology and snake oil and pseudoscience that pervades the fitness industry. And instead, we delve into science-backed solutions that specifically focus on what these guys specialize in, which is muscle building and fat loss combined with health. So if you go to bengreenfieldfitness.com/mindpump, I've got these guys' full bios, what they look like. They are pretty impressive physical specimens, as well as more about how you can tap into the goodness that is Mind Pump. We talk about everything on this show, from how to do anabolic triggering sessions to why bodybuilders are disappearing to Kuwait and somehow coming back just a couple months later with 20 pounds of extra muscle, to underground muscle building and anabolic supplements like SARMs and Clomid and injectable testosterone, why you probably need far less protein than you think, the biggest myths in the fitness industry, and a lot more. So I think you're gonna dig this one.
Hey folks, what's up? It's Ben from BenGreenfieldFitness.com back once again in a very unique situation. My house has actually been taken over by a bunch of swole guys from San Jose, the dudes from the Mind Pump podcast. Yeah. We had dinner last night, first of all. You guys showed up and I put you right to work. Did you enjoy that?
Yes.
So strange,
I noticed that.
I got to tell your audience how this all went down. So we show up, and I'm sure they know this about you, but barefoot outside, it's nighttime, and he has this bale hay.
Yeah,
with him.
Yeah.
First time. What's that all about?
Hey guys, carry some hay with me.
Well,
you
guys were tardy.
Like it was a test.
You guys were tardy for dinner, so I started taking care of that. I had to finish off my honey-do list and take care of the hay.
I see.
And if you're listening in and you haven't moved around hay before, I was actually telling you guys this story last night. So I got my ass kicked in the recent Train to Hunt competition, which is basically like obstacle racing with weapons, and there's a lot of sandbag carries and a lot of unwieldy, like 100-150 pound backpacks that you're hoisting around. And I asked the guy who won it, who I'm actually trying to get on the podcast, like what his go-to workout was. And he's like, I drive around to farmers' fields and bale hay, yeah. Basically get paid to work out doing clean and jerks for 2 hours. Bailing hay.
So you're just doing us a favor. That's what that was.
Just doing you guys a favor.
I appreciate the workout.
Yeah, getting you ready for dinner.
It was nice. I feel like it was a test. I think it was like, you know, I got to see if these guys are going to come to my house. They're going to have dinner with my family and my wife. We're going to do a podcast together. We're going to see if they have real world strength, you know?
That's right.
Yeah.
Functional strength.
Right. We're not just like balloons.
We could have done concentration curls.
I was just going to say I was fatigued because I had done those earlier. I've done some donkey kickbacks too.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah, for sure.
I was actually impressed with Sal's ability to carry the bale of hay there. I knew yeah. Justin would be fine.
Oh, yeah.
I did that for a good portion of my life.
Well, I mean, considering I'm stronger than you guys, I'm sure.
Considering you don't do any manual labor. That's what we were considering.
I think functionally, one of the strongest times I've ever had in my life in terms of my own strength was in college when I was painting and baling hay and playing water polo. Those were those three things all put together.
Oh God, imagine that
potent mix.
Well,
someone should create a DVD: the water polo, hay baling, painting.
We might
DVD.
Have our next program.
Interesting.
That's how we'll get people to fix up our new studio and paint it and stuff. We'll just tell them it's part of the workout. It's because of the long term frequent use of your body. I mean, when you're working, you were working for hours during the day. When we work out, it's an hour.
Yep.
That's the difference. Well, and it's kind of this moderate intensity activity that people just don't consider a workout, but they don't realize how effective it can be at.
Well, this is something that we talk a lot about is, you know, frequency over intensity and how important that is, you know, and that's, when you do something like that day in, day out. I mean, Sal talks about like look at a mailman's calves, you know, things like that. It's not like the guys over there doing calf raises every day. Like he's in there stimulating his calves though all day long, walking around. The same thing goes for like, God, if someone who's doing water polo, talk about a sport where you got to have some serious strength to keep yourself above water.
Yeah, constant resistance.
That's one of the things I tell people with water polo is it keeps you fit because if you don't stop moving, you die. Yeah. It's one of those sports where if you don't stop that egg beater kick, which is it's a great, and I still do that. Like if I'm at a hotel with a crappy pool, I'll use my old school tricks from water polo where I'll do the egg beater kick hardcore for like a minute. Then you get out and do push-ups, jump back in, do a sprint. And there's all sorts of cool things you can do without necessarily having to, you know, like Laird Hamilton, throw dumbbells into a pool and walk back and forth under right. the water.
That's got to be some incredible hip mobility. I didn't even think of that. Egg beater movements in the pool is a fantastic hip mobility movement.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if your lateral or medial meniscus are effed up, it's also
probably
great
not
way
good
to destroy your knees. But it is good fitness. Now, one of the things that you guys brought up is we were punishing chicken and buckwheat wraps last night. My wife provided
us hungry.
With. It was a good meal. We had some wine.
Phenomenal meal.
I had a cheeseburger afterwards.
Exactly. I'm like, I hope these guys don't leave and have to go to McDonald's.
No, not at all.
And tomatillos. Tomatillos.
Yeah. Delicious.
Oh, yeah. That was excellent.
That was a treat.
The next superfood.
If you guys are listening in, yes, we are going to create a gently dried green superfood powder made of tomatillos, but we sprinkle tomatillos with like an Aztec salt. And if you haven't had tomatillos before, this is a new addition to my wife's garden that she's growing. Just hunt them down, find one, and eat it. It's like what do you guys think? It's like a sweet tomato.
Yeah, it doesn't even taste like a tomato to me. It actually had like it almost tasted like an apple.
Yeah,
it's got a crisp
taste of an apple.
I thought it tasted like a green apple. It had like a really sweet taste.
Tell me about this Aztec salt.
One of those hybrid genetically modified foods that's going to give us cancer.
Yes. Tell me about the Aztec salt. I've never had Aztec salt before.
Aztec salt is harvested sustainably on the Mexican coast. And by sustainably, I'm guessing that means it's not 8-year-old Mexican children harvesting it, but actual full grown Mexican adults getting paid some kind of a wage.
Got it.
That's just the picture I create in my own head.
Mm-hmm. But it makes you feel better when you sprinkle it on your,
you know, as you guys know, you know, sodium chloride, and I don't have to tell most of our listeners this, it's not doing your body the most favors. It's usually aluminum caked. The extraction methods are harsh. The solvent methods are harsh. And all you get usually is sodium unopposed with many of the other, you know, 72 plus minerals that you'd typically get from a good salt, like a Himalayan salt or one of my other favorites, the black salt that you get from the Kona Coast. That's another really good
one. I just bought some of that. My favorite salt is it's the salt harvested from the tears of Tibetan monks who meditated for years. Mm-hmm. It's very pure.
You let it dry out. Yes.
Yes.
It's very anabolic.
2 days. Preferably alternative lifestyle, one-armed Tibetan monks, so that you fire on all cylinders. And the Aztec salt is a very clumpy. You guys probably know this. Some people even put it in like a salt grinder to grind it. Mm. But I like it clumpy. I like to be able to chew my salt.
I'm the same way.
And what I do is I travel with this everywhere. I get strange looks at restaurants, but I'll pull it out and just sprinkle it on anything. And it enhances the flavor profile of just about anything that you put it on. But it also provides you with minerals, you know, and you know, for a guy like me who's working out a lot with the adrenal glands being a storehouse of minerals and, you know, needing to retain water well and needing all the other things that minerals do for me, that's one of my go-to sources. And it's a heck of a lot more tasty than like one of these trace liquid mineral dropper.
Where do you find it?
I order it.
Yeah, you order it. It's not something you can pick up at Safeway.
I don't think you can find it at Safeway. No.
It's not as harsh as regular salt. It was very tasty. It didn't have that bite that regular salt does, probably because it's lower in sodium.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But it's a really great flavor profile. Plus, it's Aztec. You can't go wrong with something that has the badass title. Aztec. Anything.
It's ancient,
man. We could do Aztec tomatillos. You could have Aztec milk. Aztec ketchup, anything that's Aztec, automatically.
This is brilliant. I think we should all collaborate and make an Aztec warrior workout.
Mm-hmm. Yep, exactly.
If you don't do the workout, then you get sacrificed.
Run some pyramids or die. Yeah.
I would like to ask you guys about something that came up during dinner last night. And honestly, I know for those of you listening in, when there's four people talking, it's hard to tell who's who. But Adam here is the house bodybuilder, right?
He's the
husky voice.
Knows a lot about getting swole. Yes, the husky voice. And Adam, we were talking a little bit about things like underground things that are coming up now that I get a lot of questions about, right? Like HGH frags and peptides and SARMs and a lot of these newer muscle gain / fat loss / growth hormone increasing type of compounds that people are now turning to as an alternative to, say, amino acids and creatine and fish oil and all the old boring proven stuff.
Well,
and you mentioned that guys are now going to Kuwait and coming back swole. Tell me about this.
Yeah, and this is completely speculation on our part because I have no proof, but it's pretty crazy when you see, and there's been a handful, you know, I'd say about 5 or 7 professional bodybuilders that I know that have gone over there. And these are guys that have been competing for 10, 15 years of life, you know, at that point. And you know that, you know, every 1 pound of muscle you add is a victory at that point, right? They're taking already tons of gear and they're
because you've put on so much muscle by that point that even just getting tiny, tiny increases in muscle is considered a win.
Yeah, exactly. Because you've already, not only have you reached your genetic potential, but you've also done everything you can almost chemically to enhance that. You know, when you see guys, you know, add even the smallest amount of muscle at that level, you're extremely impressed. And we're seeing these guys right now that are going over there and they're coming back and they're not spending more than a couple months there. I mean, I'm talking, you know, 60 to 90 days and they're back and they look like they've added 20, 30 pounds
something crazy is going
of
on.
Lean mass to their body.
Something crazy is going on. Quite.
Again, this is pure speculation, but I highly doubt that it's having anything to do with hormones because they've maxed out. I mean, they're these guys at this level are using testosterone,
grams
a week, growth hormone. They're using insulin. They're using, you know, IGF-1 and all these different compounds that they've been using now since the 90s at high doses.
Right.
And these guys were already walking around 280 pounds. I mean, shredded, massive guys. They haven't added muscle in the last 5 years because they've hit that limit.
Right.
Then they go over there and 2-3 months later, they come back and like, what just happened?
What do you guys think?
My money is on, because we know the science on myostatin inhibition is developing, right? You know,
he thinks that. I don't know if we're there yet. You know, I'm not sure if we're there to it, but
seeing pictures of the cows that
so myostatin, backing this up a little bit, like when myostatin would be a specific gene. Is it a gene or an enzyme?
Myostatin is a protein that when it's elevated, it inhibits muscle growth. It's a muscle growth controller. And when they do studies on animals, well, they'll genetically, you know, modify the animal so that it has...
It works like a safety mechanism for us as humans.
Well,
it stops us from continuing to build and build and build and build.
There's actually an animal that naturally has very low or defunct myostatin. It's the Belgian blue bull, and it's been bred this way. They bred it this way, and it had these extremely muscular bulls. And if you look them up online, They look freaky. They look crazy.
So it's a myostatin knockout bowl.
It's based, yes.
And people could literally Google myostatin dog, myostatin bowl, and you'll just see crazy.
I'll find a picture. By the way, if you guys are listening in, I'll put the show notes at bengreenfieldfitness.com/mindpump. That's bengreenfieldfitness.com/mindpump, and I'll be sure and put a swole bowl in there for you to look at.
So when they do these studies on animals, they'll take mice and they'll take one and switch off their myostatin gene and leave the other one normal or whatever. Here's the crazy thing. They don't exercise anymore. They don't feed them any differently, and they just build muscle, like ridiculous amounts of muscle. The kind of muscle that you would expect on an animal that was given high doses of, you know, androgens and put through exercise and fed differently. Very crazy stuff. That's like the next generation.
There has to be a biological trade-off to that, though.
I would imagine.
Do these animals get cancer?
I haven't read anything about that yet. I don't think they quite understand the other functions of myostatin besides, like you're saying, I mean, turn that off. What could it possibly
I think anything do? I've read is it's more like their heart giving out to be able to handle all that, right? Mm. To be able to move that. You weren't made to
Does the heart give out or does it get hypertrophic?
Well, I don't know. You know,
that's a great question.
It is a great question. There's not a lot of studies on it. And that's why I don't know. You know, Sal says that. That was his theory on that's what they're doing over there. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, for sure if that's
pure
it.
Speculation.
But, you mean Kuwait?
Yes. Yeah. You know, I tell you what, and you know this, you were in bodybuilding, that, you know, if there is anybody that's doing the crazy shit and that's really, you know, going after the way out there. And I mean, bodybuilders, they've been doing it forever. You know, they pioneered a lot of stuff that we have now. A lot of people are afraid to take that next step. And that's one of the things that we do appreciate about them. You know, a lot of people talk trash at, oh, they're a bunch of steroid freaks and this and that. But a lot of these guys are, you know, kind of like bro scientists a little bit. Mm-hmm. You know, they go in and they're playing with these things. And
it's all right. Some of the most intelligent writings on the entire internet are on bodybuilding forums.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well,
proceed with caution.
I would say for knowledge on using hormones, they're right up there with the Soviet coaches that coach the athletes. I mean, the timing and the doses and what to use when and how to use this to prevent your estrogen levels from going too high and all this other stuff.
I want to ask you a little bit about some of these like lesser known techniques for muscle gain. Mm-hmm. But by the way, that photograph behind me that you guys can see here in my office, that's me bodybuilding, and I was completely natural and
extremely impressive.
By natural, I mean, and I was telling you guys this last night, literally tuna fish cans with ketchup and relish.
That actually doesn't count because tuna fish is extremely anabolic, they found. So
it's the mercury.
Yeah.
The mercury just pumps you up.
Yeah.
I eventually got a sponsorship with ABB. I don't even know if they're around anymore,
but they
made these protein cans, right? Like the protein would come to you in like a soda can, right? Uh-huh. And you just pop it open and drink it.
I remember.
It's full of
super high quality
thermostats.
Tasted awful too.
BPA and other you're going to shit out a straw components that, you know, Lord knows what. You know, the ingredient label takes up half the can, which is always a warning sign. But,
yeah, right.
But that was my go-to was ABB bodybuilding shakes and tuna with ketchup.
Oh, I was right with you, man.
I remember
you guys remember Blue Thunder?
I do.
It was literally a bottle of everything. Like you looked at the ingredients, you're like, oh, it's got Smilax. Oh, it's got saw palmetto.
ABB had one too, and I forgot the name of it, but it was the everything.
Did they make the speed stack? Was that ABB?
Yeah, that was ABB.
Okay, because that's my favorite thing of all time.
This guy
I just
got
remember
me on
the chocolate protein shakes. That and then my other go to is Redline.
Yeah,
which is like the pre workout.
Yeah. You ever inject that?
Another one that makes you sweat.
No. But actually, the only thing that I have much experience injecting that I'm using now, like I have a bum ankle right now from my last Spartan race.
I saw you had a little bit of swelling.
Yeah.
There.
So and I was actually running when you guys showed up this morning. I was running the Mark Pro ElectroStim on it. Just to pump out some of the inflammation, but I've been injecting a fragment called or a peptide called BPC-157 into it, which is just basically like a healing peptide that initiates that inflammatory cascade. They isolate it from gastric juices because that's where you'll find it in humans, where it can be used to heal gastric mucosa, for example. And that's actually, you can take an insulin syringe and you can draw a BPC-157 back into it and spray it into your mouth to help with healing of gastric mucosa. But there are a lot of these things now that I'm seeing pop up on the internets that might be old news in the bodybuilding world, but that I'd like to get kind of your guys's opinion on as far as like, you know, obviously there are things like I mentioned, like creatine and fish oil and a good high quality protein that can help people with something like putting on muscle. Mm-hmm. But as far as these more underground things, you know, like SARMs, for example, is something I recently touched on a blog post, and peptides or growth hormone fragments. Are there things that you think folks could be using, should be using, don't know about, or that would be extremely efficacious for the people listening in that may want to put on muscle and add things into like
creatine? Well, we talk down a lot about SARMs just because there's just not a lot of good studies yet. You know, it's that's kind of like buyer beware. You know, if you're going to go, I mean, and we, when you've seen stuff, I mean, people are, you know, there's the, what is the latest one? We just talked about one recently.
Well, here's the thing with a lot of these. So yes, bodybuilders have been messing with SARMs now for at least maybe 5 years. And they're all available as research chemicals, by the way. Yeah. They're not legal.
Right. You have to buy them from like Peptide Warehouse or Blue Sky Peptides or one of these other websites.
Exactly.
But so SARMs, for example, explain what it is and what it would do for someone and why you do or you do not like it.
Well, a SARM is SARM stands for selective androgen receptor modulator. So it attaches to the androgen receptor. And the goal of a SARM is to elicit the positive effects from those receptors and not so many of the negative effects. So some of the problems with taking testosterone, for example, is you get anabolic effects, but you also get androgenic effects, which are the masculinizing effects or the acne or, you know, the hair loss and those kinds of things, the undesirable effects of anabolic steroids. SARMs are supposed to, kind of mitigate that a little bit. You're not going to get some of those negative effects. It supposedly, at the right doses, won't affect your own hormone levels, although they're finding at high doses, or at least the doses that people are using, you know, on the gray market, that they are getting some shutdown of testosterone. But the drugs themselves are being studied for, you know, osteoporosis, for male, you know, what do they call it? Andropause, as an alternative to testosterone and testosterone derivatives. The problem that we've talked about SARMs a few times now on the show, the problem that we have is with testosterone, we have a really good idea.
We know so much more about that.
We know what it does and what it doesn't do. We know what your side effects are going to be. We know what the doses, you know, you can take. We know, where you can get it from, especially if you get a prescription. It's, you know, with SARMs, we don't quite know all of the effects it has and if there's any long-term effects. And it's still undergoing, you know, testing at the moment. But if you go on the forums, you can read about some weird side effects. Like, I think it's called S4. People are like complaining about like vision changes, you know, like there'll be a yellow tint to everything that they look at, or it'll change their ability to see at night, which is a little weird. It's a little, you know what I mean? It's like, take some steroids.
Kind of cool.
Yeah.
Save money on blue light blocking glasses.
Exactly.
I just feel like if you're somebody who's considering going that direction, you know, and I'm not one to advocate taking, you know, steroids, but if you're going to go mess with some of that, I feel like you're safer going in a direction where we know more, you know, and it's kind of that gray area right now. We're still learning so much about him. You know,
what would be a direction where we know more? What do you mean?
Well, like as far, like Sal was saying, like testosterone, like we know more about testosterone, how that affects you. I mean, there's hormone, but you can go see a doctor now and actually get it prescribed to you if your levels are lower than normal, and they can monitor your blood and see that. SARMs, like I've always been afraid to mess with something like that. I'm afraid to mess with something that just hasn't been studied for a very long time. I'm not quite that risk. I don't care that much about getting the extra edge or performance from some of that, when I still feel like there's so many other things that we can be getting better at. Like, you're a perfect example of somebody who I think is neat to see, like, mess with all the different little tiny things to just get better performance, better sleep. But that's because you're doing all the big pieces first. You know, you got people that are taking SARMs or taking steroids or taking...
You mean the goat milk and the tomatitos.
Exactly. Yeah. Even the way you treat your sleep and the lights in your house, and there's so many other things that are natural, that are safe, that are going to help you first. And I feel like that's the order of operation that we should all strive for first before we add like this next bit of performance, or you know,
that's not sexy.
You're right.
But you're also, I mean, you know, you're also, you know, you're a biohacker, right? This is something you really enjoy. I think, you know, experimenting on yourself is excellent. I think that's, if you're going to do, look, I believe everybody should be able to do what they want to their body. They own it. You're also very educated, and So this is something you do for yourself to to see what the effects are, so you can report on them, which I think is actually quite responsible. You have an audience that's going to listen to you more than they're going to listen to some other person. But to the average person, average listener that, like on our show and stuff, I mean, we're always like, look, if you're going to do anything that's out, that's fringe, that's different, that has nothing to do with food or exercise or water or sleep, and you want to inject yourself with something, go to the doctor, get prescription testosterone. We know what it does. It'll definitely build muscle. You'll definitely have increased libido. You'll definitely get some of the, you'll get maybe some negatives too, but we know what they are. But some of these like research chemicals, it's crazy. You can go on these sites, these research chemical sites, and you can get your hands on all kinds of stuff. You can get your hands on, Nolvidex and Clomid and, all these estrogen blockers, and you can get, Arimidex and all these drugs that are normally, scheduled substances.
Clomid is another one that you hear a lot about. Can you explain what Clomid is? Because wasn't there a UFC fighter that recently got banned?
John Jones.
Why would he have been using that? And what is it about Clomid that would allow you to have some kind of a performance enhancing
effect? So Clomid and Nolvidex are both SERMs. We just talked about SARMs, right? Selective androgen receptor modulators.
Okay.
A SERM is an estrogen receptor modulator. So very similar. It attaches to the estrogen receptor, and the goal of SERMs is to block the estrogen receptor. Block it and try not to activate it. And so
more than likely, he wasn't taking it.
Keep me from getting man boobs and weepy during chicken.
Yes.
Exactly. To prevent the negative effects of all this excess testosterone that might be building up. However, the way that I would speculate that he used it, because they test, they're tested for steroids in the UFC. However, if you take testosterone and you get off in time, by the time they test you, you'll show up okay. Your testosterone levels will be back to normal. However, to get your testosterone levels back to normal can take some time after going off, large doses of, testosterone. And so one of the ways you can speed up the process is by using a SERM like Clomid, which tricks the body into producing more testosterone quicker. Now, a healthy man taking Clomid won't get a boost in testosterone, but if it's low, it can accelerate that rebound.
Well,
that
typically, that's actually the direction that most doctors, like a hormone therapist, if you were like, let's say your free test is like 200 range or whatever, they typically will,
which would be low.
Yes, would be low. Like you're at your free range is 300 to 1200 range, right? Is kind of what they would say is
normal.
Yeah, which is obviously there's a large range there, but typically people fall in there. And if you're down below that, that's actually the first place they'll go. A hormone therapist will first go.
And then number two, what, HCG probably? Wait,
they'll first go to something like Clomid?
Yes.
Before giving you testosterone?
Yeah. Okay. They'll try to do it that
jump
way.
Jumpstart your body's system.
They'll try and do it that way first. And then if it's not bumping you into the normal range, and it depends, like I've had different hormone therapists that I've met and talked with, and because it's kind of a newer industry, really, it hasn't been around that long. And so different doctors are more stringent than others as far as what they'll do, how they'll dose or what they will offer or what they'll tell you should take. But it really doesn't take that much synthetic testosterone to get you into that normal world. I mean, most bodybuilders, we're taking cycles that are much larger than that. But that's a lot of when I got into it and, started competing, that's kind of like most of the bodybuilders, that's what they typically just focus on. Like that's what another thing where I talked about what I enjoy.
They typically just focus on
the hormones, how much more of this can
chemically
I take?
Chemically enhancing themselves.
Yeah. We talk a lot about program design and nutrition and the importance of all that, where, a lot of the locker room talk is, what do you want? And, how many grams of this are you taking? And what are you taking after this? It's cycles.
What do they call it? Gear?
Yeah, gear. Yeah, gear.
What gear are you on?
Yeah, what gear are you on? What are you taking? And
this is why you look at their routines and they look the same. I mean, you look at bodybuilding routines and their workouts are almost identical. It's the same. Yeah. Body part split. You start with the compound movement, move to your finishers, get a pump. Nothing really groundbreaking with program design. If you want to see good program design, you got to go strength athletes, Olympic lifters, power lifters, or old-time bodybuilders. If you go back before the introduction of steroids, bodybuilders worked out very different.
The guys in the back of Mad Magazine.
Yeah. I mean, you look at like the older team
with what are those kind of dumbbells that where they're round? They look like balloons on either end of the
dumbbell. Oh yeah. Old school
hoisting those old timey.
Oh man, yeah. But those, they had some incredible feats of strength.
Doing bent presses and stuff.
Yeah. Feats of strength.
Yeah. Twist your mustache on the side. And you're,
exactly.
And you're good to
they come up onto the circus stage right after the girl who rides with 1 foot on a horse.
Oh yeah.
Two horses.
Exactly.
Yeah. So program design, these old school guys, what were they doing?
So this is interesting.
The old timey
bodybuilder. So a while back when I developed a program and then we worked on some subsequent ones called MAPS. And MAPS stands for Muscular Adaptation Programming System. And some of the basis of that was studying the old time strongman and bodybuilder routines. Cause I found that I saw that they were very different. You know, the old time strongman and bodybuilders trained full body 3 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
They trained movement much more than muscle. So it wasn't like they were like, I'm hammering my bicep or my tricep. It was like, I'm pulling in this direction or I'm pushing in that direction. Mm. And these guys, you know, this is before creatine and protein powders, were incredible. They looked incredible, but their feats of strength were mind-blowing. I mean, you're talking about like Eugene Sandow bent pressing. I don't know if you know what a bent press is. It's a one-arm kind of side bend, almost looks like a windmill.
Not a bench press, a bent press.
Bent press. This is a one-arm technical press. It's almost like a windmill movement with 300 pounds in one arm. And this is a barbell. It's a long barbell. So these feats.
So you're like pressing the weight overhead and kind of bending your body to get under the weight.
With rotation.
Yeah, I think I've seen this picture.
And it's the feats of strength are incredible. The muscle that they built, especially for the time, was incredible. And their workouts were very different. They did full body workouts.
How do you know?
Because they had them all written down. And really? Some of them even sold workout plans. So you could buy them and see these old timey, you know, barbell dumbbell workout or whatever. And there were some muscle magazines back then that would publish some of the workouts. And I'm talking a little later, you know, the 1920s, 30s, 40s.
Okay.
But they didn't train to failure. They did train intensely. But they did a lot of frequency. So, you know, whereas a bodybuilder today may hit chest once a week really hard and hammer the hell out of it, they would do some kind of a chest movement 3 or 4 days a week. They wouldn't go completely to failure and they, you know, got great results. And so I played with this type of, you know, programming on myself and on clients and I was blown away by the results.
Did you wear the leopard skin?
I did. That was part of the, that was part of the
Tarzan.
Absolutely. Yeah. But I was blown away by it.
Well, this is also the evolution of the trigger sessions too, which is a concept that, you know, Sal came up with the original MAPS, which is instead of just hammering the body every single time is getting these, low doses of frequency of just sending that anabolic signal to the muscle. So,
How were they getting a good anabolic muscle growth signal without training to failure?
So this is an interesting and this is a very good question. It's interesting because the muscle building community has hammered home the fact that you need to go to failure in order to send a muscle building signal. But there's lots of factors that you want to consider when you're trying to build muscle. One of them is, are you sending the signal? And then number two, are you teaching your body to adapt or are you simply wanting your body to recover each time? Because recovery and adaptation can be two different things. Your body can simply want to heal from damage. And you see a lot of people like this, right? They go to the gym and they get really sore. They beat themselves up, but there's no progress. They're not adapting. All their body's doing is healing. Heal, beat down, heal, beat down. What you want is you want adaptation. And for anybody who wants evidence of muscle building without failure, go look at a plumber's forearms or a mechanic's forearms, or go look at somebody who does hard labor. They don't train extremely intense at all. They've been doing it for years, and yet their muscles start to develop from this low levels of frequent stimulation.
Yeah, but I mean, like when I'm working on a, I'll admit I work on a bicycle more than I work on a car, or you know, when I'm when I'm screwing something to a wall here in my house, like I'll screw and screw and screw the screwdriver, for example, and my forearms get to the point where they just can't go anymore.
Sure,
and then I have to stop and then start up again, or yell at my wife about where the automatic screwdriver is the drill, that's not considered to be failure.
That's different. I mean, that's fatigue. I don't know if necessarily that you would call that failure.
Okay,
but I think and what I found with training, because you know, between the three of us, we've probably trained, I don't know, thousands of clients. Going to failure for most people is more intensity than is necessary. And the thing with getting the body to adapt is you want to send the signal, but you don't want to go beyond what is necessary, because now you're tapping into the body's ability to recover. And, you know, studies will show that muscle building signal lasts for about 48 to 72 hours. So if I hit my legs super hard to failure, hammer the crap out of them on Monday, by Wednesday, even though I'm still sore and I'm still recovering, that you know, that protein synthesis signal, that muscle building signal, fades quite a bit. And so it makes sense to hit it again, to send that signal again. And rather than sending one super loud muscle building signal and then let it dampen until the next time you work out, send one that's intense. I mean, don't get me wrong, it's a hard workout, but not to that, quite to that point, but you hit these peaks more often throughout the week, and you build more muscle. And it's pretty crazy at how effective that simple philosophy is.
So you'd go full body. Let's say, for example, if you're going to do like kind of like the old timey, I want to build strength,
yes,
routine without spending copious amounts of time in the gym doing, you know, 8 different types of exercises for my biceps.
Correct.
I'm going to go full body 3 days a week, but I'm not going to go to fail. I'm going to push hard, but not go to complete failure.
We always say stop about 2 reps short of failure.
Would that be like, what if you just decide, okay, I'm going to do, and I want to ask you like an example of what a full body workout would be, mm-hmm, here in a second, but would that mean maybe you're going to go do your workout without, say, a spotter or somebody to help you out, and just, mm-hmm, basically decide, okay, once my own body isn't able to do it anymore, that's when I stop?
No, so it takes, when someone starts training this way, it usually takes a few weeks for them to get in tune with what that means for their body, but
it's really the breaking down of the form.
Yeah, you know, yeah. I mean,
at that moment once
biomechanics starts to suffer.
Yeah, right. Once it starts to really suffer, and you think to yourself, like, I could squeeze out maybe 2 more reps, and then collapse, you should stop before. So you stop 1 or 2 reps short of that, and then you're able to hit the body more frequently as a result.
Okay, so walk me through what a typical routine would look like. If I were gonna go into the gym and use one of these old timey routines, or like you, what did you say MAP stands for?
Muscular Adaptation Programming System.
And that's kind of like your adaptation of some of these things that you found when studying.
Yes, and there's a lot to the program. But if you were to do a very basic rundown of a full body routine, very, very simple. First off, if you're looking for maximum muscle gain and strength, you'd want to focus on the big compound movements, right? Your squats, your rows, your pull-ups, your deadlifts, your, you know, overhead press, that, mm-hmm, kind of stuff. You want to do maybe 1 or 2 exercises per body part, maybe 3 sets each, and start with the big body parts and go to the small ones. So a typical workout would be like barbell squat and then a bench press, and then either a pull-up or a row, an overhead press, maybe a bicep or tricep exercise, something for your core and something for your calves if you want to. And that's it. And then you're done. And then you rest on Tuesday or whatever, and you go Wednesday and you do something very similar, maybe change it up. So rather than doing a back squat, you might do a front squat, or you may do a deadlift or some other hip movement.
You forgot the part about the old timey putting in the vinyl record.
That's true.
So on the in-between days, mm-hmm, were these guys really just sitting around? Because we were talking last night about like Dan John.
Great,
you know,
question.
I interviewed Dan John. He's like, dude, like watch college football games and eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches in between, you know, 3 days a week, full body workout, and you're going to get swole. But in my opinion, you know, for cardiovascular health and perhaps even boosting recovery and lymph flow and blood flow and everything else, you know, I'm a bigger fan of like, you know, sauna and yoga, mm-hmm, and
active recovery
and stuff like that in the off days. What do you do on the off days?
So a couple things to consider too. When you look at guys and girls that are just big muscular people, many times the information they're going to give you, it's probably not going to work for you or for most people, because these people tend to be genetically gifted. Their bodies respond very, very, very well to resistance training. So they can hammer the bodies, relax, eat peanut butter jelly sandwiches, like you said, and they'll build muscle. Whereas a lot of us may not build as much muscle, or we may gain body fat as a result of, you know, resting and eating peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. So that's one thing to consider. But active recovery is superior to just resting. Now, just resting is important too, but if you're just run-of-the-mill sore, you know, if I worked out my legs and yesterday and they're a little bit sore today, one of the best things I could do is move them again with some low-level intensity the following day. It facilitates recovery. It actually sends a very small muscle-building signal, or at least it keeps the one that you sent the day before elevated. And so this active recovery is extremely important.
What do you mean it sends a muscle building signal?
So let's say you, like, again, like you worked out yesterday, very, very hard. You sent this loud signal to your body to build muscle.
Right? I did one of these like full body routines you've described.
Yes. Okay. The following day, that signal will start to drop a little bit. And they show, again, like I said, 72 hours usually, it's down to almost baseline. If the next day I do some low-level activity, and this is the concept of trigger sessions that we put in the MAPS program. If I do some low-level activity the next day, target those muscles, hit them with low intensity, get a little bit of a pump, a little bit of a burn, it facilitates recovery, but it also keeps that muscle-building signal loud and clear versus resting and letting that signal start to dampen. And again, you know, here's a great example. If I took two groups of people, and one group of people, I had them do squats very heavily, and then the following days I had them walk and stretch and do light bodyweight lunges. And the other group of people, they hammered their legs and then they just bed rest for the rest of the week. Just lay in bed and don't move. The people in bed rest would lose muscle. They'd lose muscle and strength within a 5-day, 7-day period, even shorter. I mean, all of us have experienced that where we had to lay down and not move or have a cast on for a short period of time. You lose muscle very, very quickly. So that activity, the following, you know, days, even though it's not the same high intensity, tear up your muscles type activity, definitely contributes to adaptation. It's important.
Well, what do they say? I think the studies say that it's after three days or so of recovery from training, atrophy already begins.
The body wants to recover, but it doesn't always want to build. It's not hard to make yourself to damage muscle. That's
right.
That's easy. Any right. idiot can do that.
Yeah. Yeah. What about the use of, this is something I've heard, for example, Dr. Rhonda Patrick talk about the muscle maintenance effect of something like heat, right? Like the heat shock protein response and some of the other, muscle maintenance effects of doing something like sauna and heat on the off days.
Excellent question. So with heat shock proteins, to elevate those, it actually, you need a lot. You need a lot of heat, you need a lot of exposure. But there's some theories out there saying that it could help with building muscle with recovery. My theory on it is this. When it comes to things like extreme temperatures, cold and heat and hot, it's a stress on the body. And if there's one thing that I've learned over the years, it's that stress applied to the body appropriately will elicit an adaptation response that the body, and the body's basically trying to get stronger or tougher,
yeah.
if you will.
Hormesis, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So if I go out if I go in a sauna too long, I'll exhaust my body's ability to adapt and to recover, and I can damage myself.
You run out of magazines too.
Exactly. But if I use heat appropriately and elicit that adaptation response and over time work my way up, just like you do with exercise, you'll get some adaptations that are favorable to making you stronger and healthier. And there's cultures that have used heat and cold for thousands of years. I know for myself, I've recently been using sauna and steam room regularly, and I never have before. Mm-hmm. And evidence of the adaptation is my heat tolerance is dramatically better. Like I can go out in the sun. I mean, we live in California. It gets pretty hot there. I can handle the sun way better than I could before. And I mean, that's a form of adaptation. Something happened.
Yeah. No, I do it almost every day now. I sweat more. I'm able to handle the heat more. And vascularity goes up too. So you get an increase.
You get that vasodilation.
Yep. There's a few crossover benefits.
Do you ever alternate with cold?
What I do with my sauna practice is I'll do the infrared sauna, because the infrared sauna takes a really long time to kind of like heat the sauna up. And then I'll finish up 30 to 40 minutes of that with, I don't know if you guys were running around outside earlier and you saw that. Did you guys see the pool house?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. Yeah. So that pool is at 55 degrees.
Oh,
so
nice.
So I'll go out there and jump in that and do like hypoxic underwater swimming responsibly. No shallow water blackout.
Can you explain hypoxic breathing for us?
So normally, like really good hypoxic training to allow for that big increase in nitric oxide synthase and also an activation of what's called your mammalian dive reflex, right? So you get a little bit of vagal nerve tone. Normally, you'd be looking at holding your breath until it's pretty uncomfortable, right? You're getting some diaphragmatic contractions like the
Yeah, you want to swallow water.
Right, exactly. And then you come up for breath and you recover and you do it again. And you'd preferably want to do that with a partner just in case you did have shallow water blackout. Mm. What I do is kind of like the baby version of that. So I actually swim back and forth under the water until I feel like I probably should come up for a breath, but before those diaphragmatic contractions begin. Mm. And I just go back and forth for about 5 to 10 minutes, you know, coming up for a breath when I need to. And it's very therapeutic.
You do this post sauna, you do the sauna and then head over there.
Yeah, you feel like you're in mommy's womb, right? Yeah. Like a little baby. And there's something very therapeutic about water. It's really interesting. And then I get out and I don't get back in the heat. I just allow myself to air dry. So my body has to generate some heat, you know, get some of that brown fat conversion, the adipose tissue to brown fat conversion to activate the metabolically active fat and heat up. But when I am doing a normal dry sauna protocol, because the dry sauna heats you up faster than the infrared sauna does, I'll go dry sauna to cold shower or cold plunge, back to dry sauna to cold. And that's one of the best ways, in my opinion, to get over jet lag, like when you're traveling a lot, is I'll Google name of the city that I'm in or name of the hotel that I'm staying at, plus the word sauna, or use like the Google Maps find near here, and I'll find a sauna and just go do sauna to cold plunge, sauna to cold plunge. Japanese saunas, Turkish saunas, and Russian saunas all typically tend to have a cold pool. One of those little cold showers where, like the old school cold showers where you pull the handle, right? And the water comes out. It's just like this big.
That's ball shrinking rain shower.
Yeah. Yeah, but that's the way that I do the hot cold.
Have you messed with cryo at all? Have you done cryotherapy at all?
Yeah, there's one down the street from my house. And I like it, but I like water. I mean, cryotherapy is nice because you don't have to get wet, right? You can just put your clothes back on. Always back to back, right? So you do the 3 minutes that they'll let you do. And then you have them measure your skin temperature, and you want the skin temp to get back up to, I think it's 170, and then they'll let you back in. If you do back-to-back 3-minute sessions, you get a way better cold thermal response.
Oh,
like 10 minutes later, I'll be driving down the street and just shivering. But I still like water, you know, because water, like I mentioned, that dive reflex, it activates that. You get the actual compression of the water, compression of the cold against the skin. And from what I understand, that actually deactivates some of the lymph fluid backflow that can occur when you are doing cold without compression. So cold for recovery should be accompanied by compression in an ideal scenario.
So like massage, would you say?
What do you mean?
For compression?
What you would do, for example, is you would get compression gear and put ice packs underneath the compression gear. Or you would use water and you would get in the water and the pressure from the actual water, the hydrostatic pressure from the water, forces the cold up against the muscle.
Now, I would imagine the cold water would probably stimulate that wanting to breathe effect even more, because I get that from a cold shower.
Yeah, that's what you're looking for vagal nerve tone, which you can increase through freaking like chanting, singing, gargling. There's all sorts of weird things.
Justin
like
gargles.
I do that. Yeah.
big gargle.
It's my favorite thing.
Yeah. Yeah. So I wanted to ask you guys, since you are into the whole muscle building thing, and we kind of went down that avenue a little bit. You mentioned the word triggering, and I wanted to actually ask you what you meant by that. What do you mean when you say triggering?
So a trigger session or triggering. So triggering, the term triggering in the context that we use it is basically, you're triggering a signal to tell the body to adapt in some way. So in this particular case, we're talking about building muscle. So lifting heavy weights intensely triggers a muscle building adaptation or strength building adaptation. You know, running long distances would trigger adaptation, improve endurance. So that's the term triggering. But trigger sessions are something that is very unique to some of the programs that we've created. And the concept behind trigger sessions is on the off days, and I'm doing the air quotes here, on the days that you're not in the gym lifting heavy weight, you are doing short 5 to 10 minute trigger sessions throughout the day, up to 3 a day of targeted exercises. So if you have a particular area that you want to work on, let's say you want to work on your mid back or your shoulders, you could target those a little more specifically. What I like to do and what I tend to advocate is a whole body trigger session, because I'm trying to, again, facilitate recovery and maintain that muscle building signal or keep it elevated from the workout that I did the day before. It's very low intensity. All you're aiming for is a little bit of a burn, a little bit of a pump in the muscles. I recommend using bands because bands cause less damage typically than free weights would. Body weight is okay, but you have to be careful. Some people don't have the ability to recover from body weight trigger sessions. You know, you definitely would. I use them all the time, but beginners, I always recommend bands. And so you do this several times a day. So what you're doing essentially is you're getting a little pump, you know, in the morning, in the afternoon, and in the evening. And
real short too. You're only
so I could keep like a band next to my desk for the days that I'm not doing this full body 3 day a week routine, and I could do like some presses, some twists,
exactly,
some squats,
exactly,
just basic full body movements, but not to failure, just like light stuff. To
just get a little bit of a burn, a little bit of pump, exactly. And what you notice is you recover faster, you build muscle faster, you burn fat faster.
Your energy too. You made a comment about the way you feel when you come out of the sauna. That's how I feel after a trigger session, right? Right after you get a little 5-10 minute, just that light pump.
Charges
like that.
You up.
It is. It's a nice little charge and surge of energy.
Think of also, you know, obviously you're at a very advanced level. Think about how you can train recruitment patterns. Think about how you can train, like if you're, you know, you're trying to get a very, you know, efficient recruitment pattern for a particular movement, like a press, like you have an issue packing your shoulder or, you know, elevating your press to lockout. What a great way to use a trigger session.
This is typically how I use them because like I'm working more on skills. Like say I'm working on my overhead press or I'm working like specifically just on improving my squat depth or something like that. I could actually focus on that more on those days with lightweight, but really, you know, work on enhancing that technique.
Yeah.
Got it. Cool. By the way, I think that's one of the first times that you've talked so far.
You guys ran the show.
That's hard when we got four guys podcasting. So Sal and Adam have been talking a lot. Justin, not so much.
This is you guys are talking about like hormones and all that. You can have that.
Yeah. You guys are visiting.
I'm not into that.
You guys are visiting from San Jose. Yeah. You can't enter Spokane. You'll be here a few days. We'll hopefully go and see the Proving Ground fights tonight maybe and go have a good time. But when you are on the road like this, how do things change for you? Like as far as your workouts go, are you all body weight, hotel room style workouts, or do you guys have any unique little twists that you do when you travel that you think folks should know about?
Sal's probably the most anal, wouldn't you say, Justin?
For sure.
Sal the only guy who actually worked out this morning?
He is the only guy.
I worked out right before I got on the plane, so that was like, you know, I had to make sure I established that. But yeah, if it's only a couple of days, typically I don't sweat it too hard. So
yeah, I feel like when we get a chance to do something like this is fun for me. You know, we're up somewhere where I've never been before, get a chance to hang out with you. And even though my workouts and fitness is a priority, that's why we have a program that's called Maps Anywhere, where I can do it with my bands inside a hotel room. So, and I have them with me. I brought them, but it becomes less of a priority for me when it's a short trip like this. If we were here for 4 or 5 days, I'm not going to take more.
I'll definitely have a plan at that point.
Mm-hmm. So I drove up, right? So I've made this kind of part of a little vacation. This is kind of the end of it.
Oh, you drove here?
I drove, yeah. I so I did some kayaking in Lake Tahoe, went to Crater Lake, stopped in Portland, Seattle, now here. And I brought kettlebells with me and about a 5 foot long stick. So I can do tension movements with the stick, do kettlebell movements. And then at the hotels that I'm at, if they have a gym, I'll do workouts.
What do you mean a stick?
Literally a dowel. So are you familiar with like stick mobility and tension?
Oh, you mean like a broomstick?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
Not like a Johnny Appleseed walking stick.
No, not that.
You could use it.
Leaves and stems
here
and
there. You could use that. Yeah.
We're into old timey training.
But I'll do
way
like
old
tension movements on it. Kettlebell exercises. And I try and do 30 to 45 minutes every single day. And when I go back to my regular workouts, many times, not only have I not lost any performance, many times I've gained performance just because it's different, you know?
Yeah. And you're probably a little bit rested and recovered.
I mean, I think that's part of it. Maybe eating more on the road.
Well, I find, and I'm curious if you're like this, typically when I find guys like us that are so passionate about what we do, that if I ever do anything, it's normally overtraining. It's normally not letting my body rest, not letting myself recover. So I kind of use these type of trips as that excuse to like, hey, you know what? Let's focus on business. Let's enjoy company. Let's kind of rest a little bit. Because when I'm home, I'm, you know, not to your extent and level, but I'm constantly experimenting with my body and hammering it on this and trying that all the time. That, you know,
it's, you make me sound like a freak, dude. There's nothing shoved up my ass or in my. I was showing you guys my little nose dildo earlier, my little laser light for my nose. What I tend to find myself doing when I'm traveling, especially when I know I'm going to be at like a conference where you wake up in the morning, you want to work out, but it doesn't happen because somebody invited you to breakfast, and then the conference goes all day, and then you're planning on working out in the evening, but it turns out there's a cocktail hour, so you don't make it to that. Mm-hmm. Like my strategy is I smash it before I go.
Yep.
Right. So then you use that that for your recovery. And, you know, so I'll take one day before I'll go to like a conference, and that'll be a double day, right? Where I'll do like a 2-a-day hard morning, hard evening workout. You show up, you recover. And then when you come back, you're fitter a lot of times because you've super compensated.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how I think I mean, I had a heavy deadlifting and squatting day right before I came up here, and I'm still sore from it. So I'm like, that's the way I look at it.
Yeah. That's because you're movement. Four big muscular guys in my house last night, and my wife had a tiny bowl of chicken. I think I told her there were either two or three of you, but either way, the chicken actually didn't disappear that quickly. You guys were pretty responsible. You did manage to polish off a couple bottles of organic wine. But dude, usually I'll see guys like you just like, honestly, the last time I was in Dubai, for example, I went out with a couple of CrossFitters over there, and literally I think they ordered all the beef tartare, and everybody had a whole chicken, like a whole freaking chicken with like, you know what I'm talking about, right? Like a whole cooked
protein's
chicken.
Protein's the holy grail, right?
Because protein, yeah. What is it with you guys and protein? Because I didn't get the impression that you were proteinaholics like a lot of the bigger guys I've seen.
No, like anything in bodybuilding, they'll take something that's got some merit, and then they apply the whole more. Oh, if this much is good, more is that much better, which is not true with anything. I don't care what it is. And it's not true with protein either. Protein intake, the best studies that we have will show an upper limit of benefit from about, I don't know, 0.7, 0.8 grams per pound of body weight. The guys now...
0.7, 0.8 grams per pound.
Per pound of body weight. Yeah, so...
So less than a 1-to-1 ratio.
Less than a 1-to-1 ratio.
150-pound female, you don't need 150 grams of protein.
No, right? any and what happens, I mean, any more... I mean, of course, you can eat 1 gram per pound of body weight. You can eat a little bit more. Is it good for you? Maybe not in the long term. Is it going to give you lots of negative side effects? Maybe not. Probably not. Is it going to give you any benefit? No. I think you're missing out on a lot of the benefits of fats, healthy fats, and maybe even carbohydrates for carbohydrate consuming.
What about the aging effect of protein, or like ammonia buildup, that kind of stuff? Do you guys focus on that at all? Or
you know, when looking at protein, too much. The thing that worries me is this. Very, very high protein diets have been loosely connected to increased risks of cancer. It does stimulate the mTOR gene at a very high level, which, as we know, helps build muscle, but also can cause cancer growth. So that's the big one for me. It's, you know, eating tons and tons of protein all the time consistently, you're probably not doing yourself any benefit. On top of that, these bodybuilders will advocate, you know, 2 grams per pound of body weight.
Some of them are doing, or some two of and my half. Peers are doing three.
So like that's like, gotta move that's product, like almost man. 3 times as much as what you guys would recommend.
If you're let's say you're a 200-pound male, that would be eating 400 to 500 grams of protein every single day. And you know...
Many of them eat like this, and you have to... You know, it's hard to get that with whole foods. So then you end up going over to the processed, right? You're getting bars and you're getting shakes and all this artificial stuff.
Well,
so
that's why it's been pushed. It's been pushed and as truth, because the businesses and companies that run the fitness industry are supplement companies. And they know if they tell you to eat, you know, if you're a 150-pound female and they're telling you to eat 300 grams of protein a day, there's no way in hell you're going to eat 300 grams of food.
Yeah, good luck
protein.
That's what, 8 to 10 chicken breasts for a girl.
Yeah, you're going to be taking, you know, 4 shakes a day. So that it just benefits them to promote this myth. A relatively high protein diet, probably safe for the kidneys, which filter protein. A super high protein diet, there's no science. There's no studies showing 2.5-3 grams of protein per pound of body weight over the course of 5 to 10 years is safe. Yeah. And it's probably not.
Yeah,
it's probably not good for you.
There's the idea about aging too, right? Like a protein restricted modified fasting diet appears to, from what I understand, like decrease the
longevity.
Decrease the telomere shortening.
I think intermittent fasting, protein restriction, definitely calorie restriction in general. Intermittent fasting gives you a lot of those benefits as well. So if you're an athlete that likes to consume the amount of protein to maximize performance, which again, is probably around 0.7, 0.8 grams per pound, still high protein, but nowhere near what we just talked about. You can get a lot of the longevity benefits from some of these studies by simply incorporating fasting, even when you're trying to bulk. And I even say, especially when you're trying to bulk or you're eating excess calories, it's a good idea to throw that fasting day in there. As a matter of fact, we sell a fasting guide. I think we're the only three bodybuilder type
meathead
dudes,
guys that talk about don't eat.
Yeah, that will promote
fasting
that.
Guy, that must have been easy to write.
Very easy.
don't eat this day.
Yeah. I had a great commercial for it. It's like, all you got to do is not eat.
Don't eat.
It's crazy.
But you would be surprised. People, I think, think that fasting means don't eat and then eat garbage, or don't eat, you know, for, you know, there's different methods of using fasting.
Wear a toga, go to the desert, meditate.
That's the real way to do it. That's
chase legit. A scorpion.
Yeah, that's the legit way to do it. But yeah, if you, you know, if you fast properly, it will also improve your sensitivity to protein. So you may not need as much protein as you think. Your body just maybe become inefficient at using it because you eat so much of it all the time. You know, and reducing it sometimes might be good.
Well, I really noticed a lot when I switched over. So I went ketogenic about 6 months for the first time ever. And the biggest takeaway that I had from it, because I still enjoy my carbs, I don't eat a full-blown ketogenic diet now, was it just changed my relationship with carbohydrates and with fats. For so many years as trainers, I mean, we've demonized fat. And I mean, I remember telling clients like, "Oh, don't even try and get fat in your diet." You know, when I first started 15 years ago,
especially
like,
saturated fat. Watch out,
broccoli, chicken, and rice.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, not very much of the
six
rice.
Six times a day, by the way.
Yeah, yeah, that was kind of was the prescription. And you know, I remember when we first talked about it, and I was like, "Why would I ever want to do that?" I eat 400 to 600 grams of carbs, and I can still stay lean. I love that, you know, which allows me all this flexibility and freedom. But when I started to replace all the carbohydrates with fat and reduce, it just, I could feel my skin, my hair, my sleep. I didn't lose strength. I didn't lose energy like I thought. I noticed too that now when I would reintroduce carbohydrates, the responsiveness of my body, now when I would have 50 grams of carbs, I would feel those surges. Where before, that was just, I was eating 75 to 100 in almost every meal. And that was just the norm. And, you know, I really started to notice the difference. I could feel it when I went. So, and even though I'm not a full-blown ketogenic person right now, and I still incorporate carbohydrates in my diet, I see the huge benefits behind that. And this is the type of stuff that we talk about. And it's just, we knew that we would be outside the norm being these meathead guys. You know, normally when guys look at us right away,
dare you label us like that?
Right. But most people do when they see us,
you're pretty meathead-y. Like half facial hair, a little bit of facial hair, a little bit of a neck beard going on over there. We got the traps, sleeve tattoos.
My best quality.
Yeah.
So you're a relatively muscular guy, especially for being an endurance, quote unquote, endurance athlete. How is your protein intake?
Because
if anybody needs to eat higher protein, believe it or not, it's probably endurance athletes.
No, that's interesting. You should ask. I'm actually at about 0.7 grams per pound, around in that range.
Now, do you keep it consistent?
Like around 20-30%. But here's the deal. Like, I don't freaking count. Like, and everybody thinks that about me being like the self-quantification biohacking guy that I'm using like chronometer.com or some special app to count everything. I really, like, aside from taking my heart rate variability every morning, I don't quantify that much at all. You guys were at dinner last night. My wife puts out the chicken and the buckwheat wraps and the vegetables from the garden, and I eat that. Lord knows I'm not fasted this morning because I just went out to the garden and, you know, threw a crap ton of vegetables in the smoothie and some coconut oil and made myself a smoothie. And I have no clue how many carbs were in that or how much fat. And the coconut oil, literally, don't tell my wife I told you this, but I just stick my fingers in there and grab a gob of it and throw it in the blender. And, you know, I don't count.
It's amazing, though, when you eat like that, though, intuitively, when you're just making good, healthy choices, you don't really have to. People are blown away with the same with me because I don't pay attention. When I'm getting ready for a show, totally different. When I have to take myself to an unhealthy place and get to 2-3% body fat, then it takes the trouble, which I'm sure you did the same thing, too. When you competed, you probably did track and count. But the rest of the year, like, who wants to live like that? I don't, you know, I want to be able to have a dinner with you and not be like, hold on, let me pull out my app real quick.
One of the macros.
Yeah. Oh, don't be that guy.
Yeah. So I want to ask you guys, I want to do the whole cheesy round table, ask a cool question towards the end of the podcast thing. So make it good, guys.
No pressure.
And I know this might be tough to be relatively Spartan-esque on, but what's the biggest lie or the biggest myth or the biggest mistruth in the fitness industry that you want to debunk right here, right now, that maybe you think flies under the radar?
There's so many.
Not something like not eating for 4 weeks is going to put you into starvation mode, but I don't know. Something maybe folks haven't heard of or something that's really near and dear to your heart.
Well, I think going kind of in that direction of that, there's this big fear of if we don't get food, for a certain amount of time that our body
lose gains.
Our body's just going to start metabolizing muscle. Mm-hmm. And I don't think a lot of people realize that the body does not want to do that.
Start peeing out your biceps.
Yes. People really feel this fear of, as soon as I get done with my workout, I got to get within the 20-minute anabolic window. I got to get the shake in.
That's why God made Jamba Juice and health books.
Right? So I think that's probably the biggest one that because maybe this is where I deal a lot with this, with bodybuilding, competing, the six-pack bags everyone's carrying around, their food, and it's so crucial to get it in when they don't realize how...
Six-pack bags tried to sponsor my show, and I told
them... Have you listened to my show?
No, I told them, I'm like, I don't carry food barely ever because I eat when it comes in handy, and otherwise I'm just... going a long period of time between meals, including my workout.
Well, I think I don't know if it was dinner you mentioned this, or maybe it was one of the interviews I was listening to you do, but you did. You mentioned that, like, an example, like when we travel, a lot of times I'll just not eat.
Right.
Right.
You know, I just won't eat for a while.
And we're like okay with that.
And
yeah.
And I don't come back home with 10 pounds less muscle on me. Mm-hmm. And in fact, I feel great, you know, and I think that's the big thing that we like to really debunk, is that you can be very muscular. You can, you know, be strong. You can be all those things. And you don't have to be stuffing your face with food all the time.
Well, and everybody wants flexibility. Talk about the ultimate flexibility when you can just say, well, I don't have to eat right now. Like, it's not like I have to venture out and find this very specific restaurant right now to fit my needs. Like, I can actually go without it.
Honestly, yeah, dude, that's it. Like going ketogenic on international flights, right? Like, that's one of the
good
best.
Luck.
Because you just don't eat, right? Yeah. You just sit there, you watch your movie, you drink some water. And dude, it simplifies life too.
It does. Yeah, sure. There's so much less stress right. If I ever hear anybody complain, like in the competing world, or people that are so focused on their aesthetics, is, oh my God, I gotta get here. We gotta go pull over and go get this or do that. Like, why?
Yeah.
Well, you know how much more benefit you would get actually from just not doing that? You'll get more benefits if you actually probably skip this meal.
We've been gas station stop for the beef jerky and macadamia nuts, so you can stay swole.
Right. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? You're sedentary anyways. Your body is not needing very much fuel right now. There's no need to go fuel it. And so I think that's something that we try to press. I try to talk a lot about that, you know, you can be buff and you don't got to eat all the time. In fact, I think that's gotten us as a population in general in a lot of trouble. I think that's what... Yeah. You know, we're just a bunch of carb addicts, man. Right. We are just addicted to the sugar and that instant rush of carbohydrates. And you don't really, it's not essential. Mm-hmm. Carbs aren't, you know, we don't necessarily need them. So
that wasn't very Spartan-esque, but
okay,
Sal, biggest myth.
Biggest myth, we covered protein intake. We covered frequent eating being a myth. I think in the muscle building world, one of the biggest myths is that in order to build particular body parts, especially the arms and the legs, that single joint exercises do them great, when in fact you probably never need to do a curl again if you do really good pull-ups and rows.
So my preacher curl bench on Craigslist.
Yeah. Yeah. Waste your time. Yeah. That would be the biggest one. Yeah. Focus on movement and skill, and then focus on muscle, not the other way around. Learn how to get good at movements and you'll build all the muscle you want.
Yeah. It's like my underground go-to exercise for bigger biceps. I don't know if you guys saw the keg in my garage. I carry it, one of my go-to workouts. I carry that around my house 10 times.
Wow. Do you really?
You just set it down in between, do some mobility exercises, pick it back up, carry it around.
Well, here's something I noticed, not to go off topic, but you have very muscular forearms and hands. And this, aside from being very attractive,
I masturbate. Yeah. I masturbate a lot with both hands.
I was going to say, you switch hands.
Wow, double pumper, huh?
Yeah. You know, when you look at people who have what I like to call real world strength, that's what you always notice, is their hands and their forearms, because that's what connects you to the world. And there's a lot of guys and girls who are very muscular, weak hands, weak forearms. Not very good carryover to the real world. They can't do it. Can't grab anything.
You're not using wrist wraps, right?
Can't milk a goat for longer than a minute. Seriously.
Is that what you call it?
Yeah, exactly.
That's what you call it, man.
No, I actually have goats and I can't. Oh, okay. I do milk, but I mean that too.
Yeah.
Justin.
Yeah, so I think for me, it's really just the over-intensity factor, being an athlete and coming from that background. Just always wanting to exceed and get to that max exertion. That was always just my focus. Whereas, you know, maybe doing that, you know, in spurts and planning it out better, where I do that maybe 3 times a week, but I'm doing a low to moderate day in between. That was like earth shattering for me. So just...
You don't have to crawl out of the gym after...
You don't have to beat yourself up so hard to get what you want. Like, there's a way to adapt and and train your body to get better results without having to hammer yourself.
You're destroying everybody's Pukey the Clown murals.
Yeah. I will take a dump on Pukey the Clown. About that. Yeah.
And that will be the title of today's
podcast. Okay. Yeah, I love it.
How to take a dump on Pukey the Clown.
Take that.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thanks for coming up.
Appreciate you having us.
I'm looking forward to getting to know you more, to giving a few listens to the Mind Pump podcast. So it's just, awesome. Is it mindpump.com?
Mindpumpmedia.com.
Mind Pump Media. Mm-hmm. What'll happen if you go to mindpump.com?
If you literally Google Mind Pump, though,
the internet will explode, probably.
BenGreenfield.com used to be literally some guy, I'm totally not kidding, bent over, right, wearing a pair of shorty shorts, and up right above him it said, enter BenGreenfield.com. And like it was that bad.
No way.
I think it's changed since then, but it was my bane for a while. That's oh why I've been Greenfield.
No, that's amazing.
No, but Mind Pump Media is similar. Now, you just go, it's got all of our programs on there, and it breaks down the show, talks a little bit about us. Our show, very informative. It's also comedy. We're also in the comedy category. It's very raw. It's very
old timey.
Yeah.
Don't listen to it with kids around because it's a little explicit.
Yeah, we've been coined as the Howard Stern of fitness. So, yeah. But don't worry, we're gonna get you on there real soon here. And
I think so.
Give you
grill you a little bit there, buddy.
I'm game. Yeah. I'm game. I'll bring my Howard Stern wig right in there with you guys. Hey, thanks for coming on, you guys.
Thanks, man.
Right, appreciate fun, it, man.
You've been listening to the Ben Greenfield Fitness Podcast. Go to BenGreenfieldFitness.com for even more cutting-edge fitness and performance advice.